Welcome to the Kilgem Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Dunbar. As always, stay tuned for the CPD code within the episode. We're picking up right where we've left off when I'm chatting to the Kilgem Technical Manager, Avril Turner, about rodent census.
Okay then, Avril, let's move on to the next set of senses.
Okay.
We're going to bundle a couple of them together. We're going to talk about hearing and sight.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the game away a little bit here. Sight's not that important with rodents, is it?
That's great, is it?
So we're going to sort of tag it along with a hearing section.
Yep.
But let's definitely start off with hearing. So can you explain to us how kind of rodents perceive sound? Is there anything special about how they're able to hear?
So when we compare, for example, rat hearing compared to human hearing, human hearing is around 20 hertz, right?
Okay.
Up to 20 kilohertz.
Right.
Whereas the rat hearing starts at around 200 hertz and then goes right up to 80 or 90 kilohertz.
Wow.
So okay. They can actually hear a much higher frequency than what we can hear as humans. Those sounds that rats particularly, and mice as well, but rats mainly, can perceive, we cannot perceive. And some of those sounds actually fit into the ultrasound spectrum.
Wow.
So they can actually hear ultrasound. And by that means, they can also create ultrasonic sounds,
yeah,
because they can perceive them. And what's even more interesting about the hearing is that the sounds they make, the sounds that they can perceive. So you'll actually find, for example, female adult rats will use a different frequency with their pups or their mate or other females in the colony. They'll use a different frequency for communication. So I mean, we as humans, we use our communication, we use words, we use speech. They don't have that. They don't use this. But they are using other sounds on basically a different spectrum to what we can even perceive. We can't hear it, but they can hear it and they can make those sounds as well.
That's amazing. Interesting you mentioned sort of female rat, you know, using different frequencies with a young.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar with us, you know, whenever we were young and we got in trouble with our parents, right, we'd know about it, right? Just by the toes, that might call.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Something's gone wrong here. So what you're saying is that they're essentially using those different frequencies as a language, isn't it?
The
changing frequency.
Yeah, just their way of communicating.
Amazing. And that's the case for both rat and mice, is it?
Yes. So there was some, again, interesting research come out of Duke University. This is a few years ago now.
Yeah.
But they used the sounds that male mice were making in response to female mouse urine.
Right.
And they modulated that sound down to bring it into a perceptible hearing range so that we could hear it as humans.
Oh, wow.
And they actually found that the male mice kind of serenade the female mouse. He sings to her when he can
romantic
smell this.
Romantic devils,
yeah. They can smell the urine. They obviously perceive the urine.
Yeah, yeah.
And, they start singing to them to woo the female mouse.
That's amazing. So there's a whole, like, a courtship almost happening,
like a whole
isn't there?
Extra level to their communication.
Wow, that's amazing. So obviously with a lot of the sort of communication being done outside of our hearing spectrum, you've mentioned sort of courtship and relationship between male and female.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that extends to interactions with the other members of the group or the community.
Yeah, completely. I mean, they would communicate to each other using different frequencies, different clicks, different sounds, and they would have for each different member of the colony, maybe use a different frequency. So particularly within that group.
Mm-hmm.
So again, like if they were talking to their pups, we said the same thing, didn't we? They would use that frequency. Mice and rats, they're both the same. They would use those different frequencies. But again, between the species, they wouldn't use the same frequencies.
Yes.
So in theory, they wouldn't be able to talk to each other using this communication. They would use different frequencies and wouldn't be able to perceive what it meant. So rats wouldn't be able to talk to mice.
That's amazing. There'll be such a fantastic sort of area of study to see if there's many like regional accents amongst rodents. So, you know, that'd be quite interesting.
Yeah, that would be, wouldn't it? And if it's colony specific.
Yeah.
And could you track colonies that would be a splinter colony from the original colony based on the frequencies of communication they use with each other?
That's right.
They learned that.
If we know the baseline of what that communication was and how has that sort of evolved after the separation, it's almost like a speciation of
language. We next need to decode language. It.
Yes. Right. Okay. A lot to get on with. That'd be absolutely fantastic, wouldn't it? So I guess, you know, talking about ultrasound, you know, many people listening to this might sort of start thinking towards, you know, echolocation and bats and that side of things. Yeah. I'm assuming they're not that well adapted to echolocation.
You say that, however. Mm. I always like to use this scenario. Say you've got a rat.
Yeah.
And you release it into a brand new system that it's not been into before. For example, it's a maze.
Okay.
We know that they can hear really well.
Mm.
We know that they can create ultrasound.
Yeah.
And with ultrasound, it is a sound wave and they will get feedback from it.
Mm-hmm.
So by creating a wave using a sound and perceiving that sound back to you because it's reflected off an object,
mm-hmm.
you have echolocation in one of its basic forms. So the theory is that there isn't much research into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But to enable them to navigate around a brand new area without having neophobia, without having the fear of it, but still be able to move, still be able to use thigmotaxis to build that muscle response, there must be an initial way of navigating around. And echolocation would be the answer to that. So in theory, yes, they can echolocate, just like a cat echolocates.
In a way, yes. Okay. That's really interesting. So I guess you can see what's coming now. That ability that rodents have, you know, and our understanding of it, have we ever tried to weaponize it, shall we say, in a way to control them to any good effect?
Yeah, this is really interesting, isn't it? So we do talk sometimes about ultrasound repellents.
Yes.
We know they're available.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really interesting videos on this. I've seen some on YouTube that have an ultrasonic detector. And there's a number of different repellents saying that the little lights are flashing. They're saying, yes, we're working. It's plugged in. And then the detector picks up nothing. We can't hear it. We can't hear ultrasound. So we have actually no idea whether that repellent is working.
Yeah,
or not.
Yeah.
And then to build on that a little bit, in theory, if it was working, because we don't speak rat or mouse, we wouldn't know what we're saying to it.
Yes.
We wouldn't know what we're communicating. We may be just creating a sound that is difficult for them, makes them feel awkward.
Yes.
They'd get used to it anyway, because they would realise and learn that it's not causing them harm. Therefore, it's just a particular sound in that environment that they would become habituated to and get used to. So even if they did create a sound that was detractive, then they would get used to it. They would learn that it's not going to harm them.
Yes, I just got this weird image of you know, a random noise played to mice. That's just sort of belittling them and making them feel really bad about themselves rather than deterring them. Just a group of really depressed mice after that.
On the flip side, though, you could be creating this ultrasound noise that's saying, come to this house. There's really good food here.
Yeah, I'm having loads of fun. This is fantastic,
isn't it? There's loads of bridge. Come on in.
Yeah, that's a difficult line to walk, isn't it? Just a quick interruption to give you the CPD code for this episode. The code is perception-CPD-153. That's perception-CPD-153. Now back to the podcast. So is there any further research going into that side of things? Are there any things that could potentially, you know, revolutionise that sort of area? Because ultrasound repellents are not, it's not something we consider to be a professional
method. No, we don't recommend them.
No.
But it's the only time I've heard them doing anything and actually doing anything at all was when the ultrasound has been modulated. It's been changed on a constant basis. It's been turned on, it's been turned off, and the actual frequency is changing.
Right.
It's quite difficult to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the only time, and that's only anecdotal. Mm-hmm. There isn't any research from any establishment that actually says these 100% work. So
yeah.
There isn't anything that says they work. But yeah, it would be some really good research actually to actually decode some of these communications that they have that might really help us.
There's so many branches of science that are linguistics and all that could sort of build into this research. Well, something for the future, right? That's that's quite an interesting one. So I guess, you know, we've covered hearing quite nicely. As promised at the beginning, you know, we are going to touch on road and vision.
Yeah.
It's not the primary sense.
No, not by any means.
No. So can you tell us a little bit about road and vision? Because people might think, you know, because they're nocturnal, they would have elements of sort of night vision going on, right? But is that the case?
No.
Not
really.
I think so.
they're using all of their other senses so much more than vision.
Mm-hmm.
Vision is not considered particularly important for rats and mice.
Yeah.
In various different research, I mean, we are kind of lucky in the pest management industry that there has been previously a lot of research into rats and mice.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're great to research on. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's frowned upon now. Testing, it's a no-go. But we can build on what's been carried out before and use that to our advantage. There is blind rats and mice that have been tested, and they perform in exactly the same way as the sighted ones.
Wow.
So no perceivable difference at all. They live perfectly well, they feed, they survive, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is that they can't see red.
Okay.
But it doesn't make them completely colourblind. They can't perceive red, and that'll be due to, obviously, the retina and the rods and cones and the formation of the different receptors there. They just don't have a receptor for red.
Right.
They would be able to see some shades of green and blue. They would be able to see it.
Okay.
But all of those colours are incredibly muted. So they're much softer and much more muted compared to, for example, what we see. Because we see in glorious technicolour.
That's right.
We see a lot of colours.
Yeah.
And they don't see not anywhere near as many colours as what we can see.
Right. So vision is it trichromatic? Is that the right word for it?
Yeah. Yes. So they don't have a full spectrum of colour that they can even perceive.
Yeah.
And to add to that, they're also very nearsighted. Everything would be a bit blurry.
I know that particular problem, unfortunately.
Me too.
Yes, there we go. Right. So is there any anything in pest control that we've tried to sort of develop to use that colour blindness or that sort of limited spectrum of colour to advantage?
100% it's the colours of the preparations we have, isn't it? They can't see those colours. We can make it any brilliant bright colour we like to help us see it and help it stand out from other food sources, and we can, for our health and safety, which really aids us, which is a great benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But the rats and mice can't see it.
Wow.
So they don't see it as a different colour. They see it as a greyish, muted tone.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So it's all these safety features that we benefit from having bright coloration, and it doesn't sort of repel rats in any weird way. It doesn't seem weird to them.
The other consideration with vision is that you've got to think that their eyes are not monocular like ours. They don't form one vision.
Yeah.
So they may see different perspectives, they wouldn't see it as one vision.
So they'll have multiple images that will overlap to a certain
degree.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Because their eyes are on each side of their head.
Oh yeah.
They're not both facing forward.
It's like when you're using binoculars and you don't quite have them lined up
with
your eyes.
Those two fields of vision are slightly separate.
Right. Okay. Something that birds have as well, is that right? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. This is it for part 2. Make sure to join us in part 3, where we'll be wrapping up this mini-series and focusing all on the rodent's taste. See you there.